Land Use. It is Wednesday, May 18th, 2005. Committee will, because we have Representative Wisnett here, we will change the schedule and move Senate Bill 413A up to the top of the list. And so we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 413A and ask Representative Wisnett to come forward. Good afternoon, Representative.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrard, honorable committee members. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on Senate Bill 413. I just left a bunch of fourth graders from Redmond Elementary School, and that was fun. I hope this will be fun. Mr. Chair and committee members, let me explain why I'm here today to testify on this bill. The requester of the bill, Central Electric Co-op, is located in my district. This is an outstanding company providing electricity to many of our constituents in North Deschutes County. Deschutes County is the fastest growing county in our state. Thus, there's an increasing demand for electricity to meet this growth. CEC has determined they need to upgrade their electrical services to Sisters, Black Butte, and Camp Sherman areas. To accomplish this upgrade, they sought to increase the power capability of the lines running through the property of a constituent by increasing pole heights on that line. When the bill was introduced in the Senate, I testified against this bill based upon the argument that this was a local decision that had been decided by Deschutes County, and we should not be introducing legislation to overturn a local process that had taken 2 years to decide and many hours by planners, engineers, and lawyers. However, the Senate passed the bill, and my favorite people, the press, portrayed me as being against power for Sisters. I have become more of an expert on power lines than I planned to this session. I tried to be an honest broker between the two sides to balance my support for property rights, private property rights, and the need for utility companies to provide essential services to their customers. As all of you know, on most issues, there are at least two sides to the bill, or to the issue. First is the requirement to protect individual property rights. Second is the requirement of electrical companies to meet the growing demand for power in our communities. This bill was drafted in response to an issue in Deschutes County. However, as the bill is written, it has statewide implications. To help this committee find a solution which is fair to both parties, I requested input from the cities in my district and numerous other associations, like the Eagle Crest Homeowners Association and Black Butte. I met with CEC officials to express my concern and willingness to work with them to find a solution, and they have been very cooperative. I have solicited amendments from CEC and received suggestions from Mid-State Electric Co-op. Mid-State is in my district also, and I'm a member of this co-op. I can definitely receive many constituent phone calls and emails in support and in opposition to this bill. Some of the individuals who provided suggested changes will testify today. I have provided the committee recommendations from that I received from Mid-State Electric Co-op, because I'm not sure they were going to be here today. And I've also provided you copies of recommended amendments that have been prepared by my office. These are ideas that seem to make some sense of this issue. The bottom line is I encourage this committee to seek a solution to this bill that is fair to both private landowners and electric companies. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Any questions of the representative?
I just have a brief question. Does this have anything to do with mosquitoes?
Thank you, Mitch. Excuse me. Mr. Chair and Representative Wingers. No, sir.
And they're all licensed. I'm sure they have proper license to be involved in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have trouble with them over mosquitoes. I want to make sure I don't fall into that trap again.
We're very happy to accommodate you, Representative. Representative Ackerman. Transmission line through private property.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman. You'll receive testimony from the property owner, Representative Ackerman, on the it's I think about 10 or 20 lines, but you'll receive. I can look that up in here, but I don't have.
Are we talking a mile? Are we talking a half a mile? Are we talking 20 miles?
A mile? 1 mile? But that's for this specific property owner. Mm-hmm. The power line runs much more than that. And again, you'll receive testimony from the power company on why they're doing this and what they want to do.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Mr. Chair, if I can just summarize one point, is that this is policy that will affect the entire state. So I think it's critical that this committee look at all the issues and try to find something that is fair to both property right owners and the utility companies. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. We'll have our first panel come up of three. It'll be David Markham, Al Gonzalez, and Roger Martin. We have nine people signed to testify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the lobbyist for Central Electric Co-op. On my left is Al Gonzalez, who's the general manager, and on my right is Dave Markham, who is the chief operating officer. All this material is being passed out. I know there are no, I believe there are no electrical engineers that are on this committee. So let me share with you, this is one of the problems that is sometimes brought to legislative committees. It's a technical and engineering problem, and I apologize. I'd like to make this as simple as possible. But I do want to give you some of the background. First of all, most people consider their, quote, electric company to be whoever delivers them electricity. Just so you understand it, in the state we have three private electrical or investor-owned utilities that are quite large and serve generally in the urban areas. We also have a dozen and a half electrical cooperatives that were started in the 1930s under a program in the New Deal to bring electricity to rural Oregon. And these are to rural United States, and these are electric co-ops. And Central Electric happens to be the largest, not because they're the most aggressive, but they happen to be in an area that is very fast-growing and includes properties like Black Butte, which didn't exist when cooperatives were first started. We're talking about a conflict between two laws. In the early 1960s, this legislature passed a territorial allocation bill setting up for all electric utilities a defined territory. It was a very complicated issue. Prior to that time, there had been tremendous amount of fight and argument that went on about private versus public power in this state. The allocation bill established areas in which all utilities had exclusive rights to serve to try to stop duplication, unnecessary duplication. One of the requirements of that law is that each of those utilities must serve all of the people, the customers in that area with adequate power. And that's kind of what is the background of this bill. When the line that we're going to talk about, the electrical transmission line, was first built in 1962, it served a sparse population and was totally adequate. In the ensuing 43 years, that population has grown, as you were here, to a point where it must be enlarged because there's just not adequate power. The next question gets to a transmission line, and I know that you're familiar to some extent in this pack that you have that shows fact sheets. If you turn to the back, there are three pictures. The very last page are transmission lines on towers. These are Bonneville Power Administration, but you also see these kind of towers that come along the I-5 corridor north and south from Salem, either PGE or Bonneville. Those are transmission towers. The second page is a 115,000 volt transmission line on wood poles. That's the kind of power line we're talking about. And the page just in front of that is a 115,000 volt transmission line on a steel tower. Now the current line is shown, or this current line is shown on the fourth page in. That's a 69,000 volt line. And what we're asking to have to be done is to increase that line on its current footprint from 69,000 volts to 115,000. And we're talking about using metal poles in this instance because metal poles have a greater strength and you can a different span, but I won't get into the engineering technicalities of it. Now, why is the bill here? I told you that there was a law passed 40-some years ago, the allocation law. Subsequent to that, land use laws were passed in this state, and land use laws set up, among other things, the Land Use Appeals Board, or LUBA. 3 years ago, this utility went to Deschutes County and said, we need to enlarge the transmission line that exists today from 69,000 volts to 115,000 volts. And Deschutes County approved that request. Several of the landowners appealed to LUBA, and LUBA overturned the local decision based on a change, and I won't get into the legal part of it. It's in some of the material we've handed to you. But what I'm talking about here is we have a conflict today between the need for utilities to serve adequately all of their customers and LUBA saying landowners have got rights in it. Now, we're not trying to trample anybody's rights. But I do want you to know that some of the folks objecting we've had a right-of-way, the utility has, for 40 years across the property. And all we're trying to do is enlarge that and footprint. Now, where are these 115,000 volt lines? Is this terribly unusual? And I would suggest to you, if you drive down Front Street, in Salem, Oregon, there's a 115,000 volt line all the way across along Front Street. If you drive out South Commercial, there's a 115,000 volt line. If you drive up Rural Street next to South Salem High School, there's a 115,000 volt line. All utilities have to bring power from the Bonneville system on that sort of transmission line so that they then can go into transformers and substations, break it down to the distribution boards that's in the area. We're happy to work with everybody. The bill would not have been introduced in the Senate if it wasn't necessary, and it wouldn't have passed 24-5. And I hope we can work out the details. We do understand there's some objections, but I'd like Al to give you more of the background on this now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. The passage of Senate Bill 430.
You need to identify, sir. You need to give your name and identify yourself.
Yeah, my name is Al Gonzalez, and I'm the president and CEO of the Central Electric Co-op. The passage of Senate Bill 413 is critical to the state of Oregon. Transmission network issues are a concern locally, regionally, and nationally. President Bush in his national energy bill is proposing to loosen restrictions to fast-track new transmission line construction because of their importance to the security and safety of our country. Existing transmission is not addressed in the bill because they are sited on valid and legal easements which the utilities own. In the state of Oregon, land use restrictions enacted after the construction and existence of many transmission lines are preventing utilities from upgrading these lines as circumstances dictate. Transmission lines are similar to any major infrastructure. For example, when a road system becomes too congested, roads are widened, signals installed to keep up with the growth and to keep the roadways safe. Electric transmission lines are no different. when the demand for electricity increases, these and other lines must be upgraded to meet the growth and maintain safety for any community. In our particular case, not upgrading a transmission line to the very fast-growing community of Sisters will put that community in jeopardy. Our winter load in that area is about four times that of our summer load, and is most likely when a problem will be experienced. In severe cold weather, the first thing that will happen will be a simultaneous increase in load in the entire region on Bonneville's system. And it will cause Bonneville's delivery system voltage to drop significantly. And together with an inadequate local transmission line, it will lead to brownout conditions. And this will lead to brownout conditions in the entire Sisters community. Now, brownout will cause massive failures of electronic components, TVs, stereos, microwaves, ovens, and others. Second, those brownouts will be followed by blackouts. And they'll lead to hundreds or thousands of frozen water lines during the winter months, causing further property damage. And finally, because the Sisters area is heated primarily by electricity, people will be forced from their homes when temperatures are well below freezing. Now, this is not an exaggeration. It is the reality of what we and the Sisters community could face as early as this winter. It is important to understand that every transmission line that exists in Oregon will, at some time, need to be rebuilt. They do not last forever. Senate Bill 413 is important to the safety and well-being of the citizens of this state, and I encourage your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Garrard and committee members. My name is Dave Markham. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Central Electric Cooperative. I've been working on this pretty much from the beginning, and I know this issue inside and out, and it is a statewide issue. As Oregon grows, it's growing into the rural areas, and many of the cooperative's transmission lines were built like ours was 40-plus years ago. And as Sisters, Black Butte, Camp Sherman area continues to grow in other areas in our service territory and other co-op service territory grow, we need to meet these demands. And the Jordan Road line, just to step back for a minute, it was installed again. It was built, constructed in 62. It became a non-conforming use when land use laws became effective 10-plus years later. And is a non-conforming use, you can go into the Oregon Revised Statutes 215.130, and when we applied to upgrade this transmission line to meet the needs of the growth for this area, we had two grandfathering clauses that we applied for under this upgrade. The first one was, again, a local requirement to serve. The second one was a no greater adverse impact with the upgrade. Again, CEC was not successful in either of those. At this point, we have no options available to us. Somebody could come back and say, can't you go through a conditional use process to upgrade that transmission line? And that option is not available because a portion of this line goes through surface mining area, and you cannot conditional use across surface mining area. So we've been told that we can't go through the non-conforming use process. We don't have the option of conditional use process. We're at a point where we have no options available to upgrade this line. On the first sheet, the fact sheet in the packet, Mr. Gonzalez talked about the need for the line out there, and I want to reiterate this because it is at a very critical point. We do have a line that was built in 1980 that carries load down Highway 126. It is 69 kV. Our Klein Falls to Jordan Road line right now is a backup line. That line down 126 has a maximum capacity of 60 megawatts before it gets into a situation, as Mr. Gonzalez stated, where you have a brownout or a blackout situation. You can see on January 5th, 2004, when it reached 0 degrees outside, we had a peak of 55.3 megawatts. That was 16 to 17 months ago. As you know, we did not have a very cold winter this last winter, and it continues to grow out in that area with new homes and new businesses. The backup line, the Klein Falls Jordan Road line, on that front page again, you can see its maximum capacity is 10 megawatts. So we do not have the ability to carry the load of the 55.3 megawatts that we peaked out at back in 2004. If we were to lose that main transmission line on Highway 126, that Klein Falls Jordan Road line cannot carry it. The need to upgrade the line, we can split the load between the Highway 126 and the Klein Falls Jordan Road line to meet the needs of the growing area that these transmission lines serve. You can see down below something even more important as our projected future load growth. 2015, 2025, and the year 2035. Just like cities and counties update their comprehensive plans to accommodate growth, we have to do that to meet power needs of our future members. And as you can see, it's pretty substantial, the growth that's projected. It's been asked, why can't we double circuit our current Highway 126 line? In other words, we have a transmission line there now. Why can't we put a double circuit of transmission going down that same line? First of all, it's extremely critical that you have redundancy in a transmission system. If a truck were to take out a transmission pole on that Highway 126 and that was the only route, you would lose all of your power out to that area. By having a backup line or another line that could carry the capacity, you can switch and continue to keep power up. The other problem with being able to upgrade and double circuit that Highway 126 line is that if you came off the opposite side of the pole with your transmission line, you would have to go in and get additional easements. If you were going off the same side of the pole, you'd have to go with taller poles. We've had the easements in place on the Klein Falls Jordan Road line since 1962. Our proposed upgrade stays within those easements, and it gives us the ability to take the power out to the growing area of Sisters, Black Butte, Camp Sherman area.
Any questions to the panel?
You originally negotiated, you didn't have extraordinary power to cite those lines at the time they were originally built. Did you negotiate them owner by owner?
Yes, each easement was negotiated individually.
And did you in that, just one follow up on this. In that negotiation, did you negotiate for rights to upgrade or to do things downstream? Because the original agreement that you signed with them for the easement you negotiated give you automatic authority to upgrade the service?
Absolutely. It allows us to maintain, operate, change out, replace what needs to be replaced within that easement for that purpose.
Any other questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, just continuing on with the Representative Greenwich's question. Your answer tells me that you did have or do have an easement in place in this situation. From what I read here, you've lost a Court of Appeals decision on this issue. Could you summarize why you lost a Court of Appeals decision if you did have an easement to cover your increased activities?
The reason we lost the Court of Appeals was simply because of the land use laws that were enacted subsequent to our construction of this line, and had to do with the legal,
in the Court of Appeals was the lawful requirement.
Yeah, lawful.
Yeah. it basically necessary to comply with the, I'm sorry, here, let me find out. It was necessary to comply with any lawful requirement for alteration in the use. It was a lawful requirement that we had perceived that the legislator intended when that service territory was allocated to us that we had a lawful requirement to serve. Well, the Court of Appeals felt that a lawful requirement was in the form of an order to upgrade or change alteration and as our transmission line, upgrade the transmission line in order to upgrade.
We felt we met that condition because the PUC mandates that we provide reliable and safe electricity to communities that we serve within our allocated service territory. But they took it to be a little more stringent than that, in that you need a lawful requirement, or they said you need a lawful requirement for the specific project that you needed to build. Mm-hmm. And of course, PUC doesn't do that, and we don't have an authority over cooperatives that require that. So other than the fact that we're mandated by the PUC to provide safe and reliable electricity, that's the only lawful requirement we have.
What was the land use regulation that the Court of Appeals held upon against you?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's correct, doesn't that give you a Measure 37 claim?
It does, and we've applied it as for a Measure 37 claim.
As we filed it?
Absolutely.
Okay. And what's the status of that?
We're seeking every option.
Yeah, well, I understand that. What's the status of that claim?
It's at the Deschutes County, and we have a 180-day waiting period. And I think they're hoping that Senate Bill 413 passes. They don't have to deal with it.
Okay.
Any other questions
from the committee?
Mr. Chairman? Yes. Could I add something here? One thing that I think is important to point out, and Representative Wisnett asked that I bring this forward. He approached Central Electric and asked us to propose some potential amendments based on meeting the needs of being able to meet the needs of the growth, some sort of a measurement that would establish that, also a height limit on the upgrade of the transmission poles. And I think there's going to be some other amendments that are going to be discussed here next, but Central Electric did respond to Mr. Wisnett with a couple of potential proposed amendments to it that would assist with meeting his request of defining the need and the height of the transmission poles that would go within an existing right-of-way, existing easement. And I did want to point out that in the packet of information, there's a, across the private property, there's a list of the power poles, the existing power pole heights. We have two designs that we've put together, and it shows what the new heights of those power poles would be. And in most cases, you'll see, looking at the existing height versus our design number two height, majority of them you're talking an additional 18 feet in height. In fact, there's one pole on private property that's currently 83.5 feet, and that would be reduced to 74.5 feet under design number two.
Seeing no other questions,
thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Matt Cyrus, Connie Cyrus, Don Schellenberg. Everybody, almost everybody testifying on this committee has come from over 100 miles, so there isn't much of a priority. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Don, Matt, I don't know which one of you would like to start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The purpose of the land use planning system is to prevent conflict between incompatible uses. An non-conforming use is an incompatible use that existed on the site before the land was zoned for its primary use. It is allowed to continue as long as the size and use remain constant. The Oregon Farm Bureau Board of Directors, 22 members, voted last Thursday to oppose the passage of Senate Bill 413. It is their concern that although the issue in the bill is not a farm-related issue, it is nevertheless set a precedent of allowing substantial change to non-conforming use without input from the neighborhood. In our case, the neighborhood could be the adjoining landowners whose farm operation could be severely impacted by the expansion or change of a non-conforming non-farm use. What is proposed in this bill is in the nature for agriculture of an old country grocery store turning into a big box store without any consideration of its impact on the adjoining agricultural industry. And so Farm Bill recommends that you reject Senate Bill 413. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Cyrus?
Matt Cyrus, Deschutes County. Chairman Garrard, members of the committee, I apologize for taking all your time on an issue such as this that should never have gotten this far.
You are the property owner.
We are the property owners. Actually, my parents own the property. Dad couldn't be here today. He's busy trying to get some crops in the ground or sunshine for a day or two. But my parents did grant an easement to Central Electric in 1962 across part of this property. The easement currently has a width of about 10 feet, which is debatable on whether or not it's even sufficient for the current 69 kV line. Certainly not sufficient for the upgrade that they're proposing. To answer your question with regard to upgrades and whether or not the easement allows for it, I would say the easement allows for construction, operation, and maintenance. It does not provide for an outright replacement. There are no similarities between the line that's being proposed and the one that's existing. The current line has heights of 45 to 50 feet pole heights. Tops of the poles run even with the tops of the trees. The proposed line would, as we just testified, depending on which version of the design, range from in the 70s to up into the 80s as far as pole height. So nearly double the height. The engineers that we've consulted with have all said that the heights they're proposing are unnecessary. We don't object to an upgrade of the system. We don't have a problem with providing power to Black Dealer Sisters. What we're objecting to is the impact to our private property by changing the use so dramatically. What CEC is essentially swatting flies with a shotgun. This bill would usurp local control and local power, local governments, and give utilities an outright right to change in an unlimited manner the scope of the utilities across private property. Conceivably, you could take a small country pole and replace it with a system of the big transmission towers that you see transmitting the main lines from BPA. It doesn't have any limits as long as you follow the same general footprints. They were careful to even in their amendment in the Senate, specify that there's no limit on the increase in height. Local governments currently get involved in everything from cell towers to radio towers. They let the community participate in the siting of some of these facilities. But what's to stop the power company from coming in and saying, well, gee whiz, we've got a whole line of power lines. We want to be in the cell business. We now want to run those up to 150 foot tall. This bill would allow them the latitude of unlimited height and no oversight from local governments. And I think it's, I think it's an outrageous proposal. They currently have lots of options. They can bury their system. Granted, it's more expensive. They can bury the distribution underbuild, much less expensive, and that would lower the height that are being asked for. They've indicated that the 126 line is nearing capacity. However, they've also mentioned that the Jordan Road line currently has a capacity of 10 megawatts. They could add 10 megawatts to the system simply by turning on the Jordan Road line. It hasn't been used in 25 years. It's energized on the one end, but it's like an extension cord laying there. It's not plugged in on the other end. And even back a couple of years in the cold snap, when they said that the 126 line reached 55, they still didn't utilize the Jordan Road line. We've been told that the 126 line was actually designed as a 115 kV line. We haven't been given the information as far as what that actually will load, a 115 would transmit, but they've testified that it has a 60 megawatt capacity as 69 that is currently operating, but we would argue that they could increase the capacity of the system simply by upgrading it to 115, as has been already been designed. The proposal that they're proposing on the Jordan Road line is also significantly higher than even the 126 line that is currently designed for 115. In their proposal number two, in which they've lowered the pole heights, what you'll notice in there is that the line height themselves are almost identical. What they did was they lowered the poles, changed the design, and put little towers on top of the poles. So yes, technically the poles are shorter, but the line is essentially the same height. What we've gotten in dealing with Central Electric is mostly an arrogant attitude and an unwillingness to look at reasonable options. We asked as was mentioned before, it did go through the county level. The hearings officer misinterpreted the non-conforming use rules as well as the legal requirement, and Luba corrected that, and the Court of Appeals upheld that. On remand, the hearings officer did deny the application. So this has been thoroughly through the county system. CEC is incorrect in saying that they do not have any options. They've indicated that the reason they can't use a conditional use is because the land use planning process or the zoning doesn't allow a transmission line across a surface mine. I'm guessing that the county commissioners would consider that an oversight and would welcome a text amendment change to allow such an application. CEC is instead afraid that in a conditional use that they would actually have some limitations to the height or conditions placed on the impact of the neighborhood. So, like I say, I guess what I'm saying is this bill never should have come here. Like I say, we apologize for taking your time, and it does have statewide implications, but I think they're devastating in the wrong direction. Thanks.
Any questions of Mr. Cyrus?
I just want to again confirm the length of the line that goes through your property.
Through our property is approximately a mile.
And what type of terrain are we looking at?
Majority of it's flat, but it goes up over the top of a hill. And in fact, in the location where it goes over the hill, we were approached by a cell company a few years ago and offered a significant amount of money to place a cell tower in the exact same location that they're proposing an 84-foot tall pole, and we turned them down because of the visual impacts and damage to the property values.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Smith.
I have a question for Mr. Schellenberg, if I might, for a clarification. Isn't there a height limit on the exclusive fine use zone of farm buildings?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, the only height limits I'm aware of are near airports. I don't believe there's any other height limits in the FU zones.
Just a comment. There are height measurements of 35 feet for buildings within an exclusive farm use zone. So I might want to check that out. But I just wanted to clarify that the farm has a height restriction already on buildings. Thank you.
Mr. Schellenberg, got a little education for that.
That's good.
That's just in Montgomery County.
Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, sir. Let's see if I can answer. Ask this question as delicately as possible. Is this a commercial battle? I mean, is this about, would you be willing to grant them that for money? Is this a matter of how much money, or if so, what's the... I don't know quite how to ask it, but maybe
that's fine. You don't have to dance around it. When we were first approached by Central Electric, before we did the research into what the minimum requirements were and what they could get away with, we basically told them no. We weren't interested in any kind of a height increase because of the the values and the implications that we cause our property. What we did tell them was if there is no other alternative and it has to be that height, we did feel that we should be compensated for the damage to the property. And we were told that they would spend $250,000 on attorneys before they would give us one penny in compensation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Matt, how long has this been going on?
What's
the period of time from when they first contacted you to today?
I'm going to guess about 4 years.
4 years?
I don't remember exact dates, but they originally approached us. And you know, back to the easement question, CEC has maintained that their easements are sufficient to do everything they want to do. But they came to us asking us to sign a new easement, and we said no. And that's when they went to the county and said, well, we're going to do it anyway, and now we're here. 4 years and about $50,000.
Ms. Cyrus, would you like to speak?
Yes, I'm Connie Cyrus. If I can remember what I was going to say. The piece of property that is at issue is a very beautiful piece of property. We have the Three Sisters in the background. It has a lot of trees on it. Very nice farmland. It would have a great impact on our property with these high poles. We've always tried to be good citizens, tried to be cooperative with Central Electric, have given them the easements that they needed. But this is too much. And so we decided we didn't want them to do that. It just seems to me that this line that goes down Highway 126 that goes into Sisters, it's about a mile and a half from where the Jordan Road line is. They say that they cannot upgrade it or do it, make it suffice. They say that if a truck hits the line, we'll lose the power. Well, if a truck hits the power pole, you fix it just like any other community does. Most communities do not have the luxury of two lines into that community. You have one line coming in and one line going out, and that's the way people deal with it. I don't understand why they feel they have to have this second line as well. And like Matt said, right now they're not using the capability that they do have on that line. We don't have an issue with the way the line looks right now. It is not very high. It does... It doesn't bother anyone, but doubling the line and the big poles and we want bigger easements, it just doesn't seem acceptable to us. I think that's all I have to say.
Any questions of Ms. Cyrus? Seeing none, thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And our final group committee will be David Clemens, Lloyd Peterson, and Boyd Keaton.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Whomever may start in committee, we'll wait till all three gentlemen have testified, and then we'll ask the questions. So,
good afternoon. My name is Boyd Keaton. I've been a member of Central Electric Board of Directors since 1981. I'm a retired farmer living in Cloverdale area, just west of Sisters. My home is approximately a half a mile from the transmission line that Central Electric must upgrade to provide reliable service. To me and my neighbors, and not to mention the entire Sisters Pipe Group, Branch Camp, Sherman area. As a board member representing a sizable constituency in and around the transmission line, it's my belief that if the referendum was held today among the CEC members in the Cloverdale and Sisters area, it would pass overwhelmingly. Reliable power is a must for not only farmers and ranchers like me, but for the kind of visitor-friendly industry that the town of Sisters has been based on since the early 70s. This is especially true when you consider that virtually every home, farm, and business in Cloverdale and Sisters area is heated with electricity because natural gas is not available in those areas. And let me assure you, it can be very cold in Central Oregon, especially when you live as close to the Cascade Mountains as we do in Sisters and Cloverdale. Granted, the last few winters it hasn't been as cold as normal has, but if it had been, it would have been not very good. Central Electric was chartered in 1940, and those early years served the farming regions of Central Oregon that the investor-owned utilities chose not to because of the lack of profit potential. Since it was chartered, Central Electric has granted free of charge more than 10,000 easements from property owners in order to construct transmission distribution lines, in most cases simply to bring power to the property owner granting the easement. The transmission line from Redmond to Sisters that Central Electric must upgrade was built in 1962, 9 years before I moved to Central Oregon. As its maximum capacity, it can carry only 10% of the power needed for Cloverdale Sisters area. In other words, if our large transmission line that runs from Redmond to Sisters along Highway 126 was damaged or down, 90% of Sisters would be blacked out. As a longtime Central Electric board member responsible for thousands of constituents who expect a reliable source of power 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the very idea of the entire region having to endure periodic brownouts or blackouts is not what I signed on for a board member more than 20 years ago. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is David Clemens, and I have been a member of Central Electric Board of Directors since 1992. I live in Sisters, and I've been a custom home builder there since 1973. My father, Clifton, who is now 99, was for many years a member of the Central Electric Great Advisory Board. As a builder, I am intimately knowledgeable about the challenges that rapid growth brings to any community, especially one like Sisters, where not only is the permanent residential and commercial community growing rapidly, but also what we call the visitor industry. Growth demands services, especially the services that are really necessities, not merely services. One of these necessities of everyday life, of course, is electricity. This is particularly true of the Sisters area because almost every home and business is heated with electricity, and Sisters is located in a cold climate. Having spent a lot of time in Salem representing the home building industry as a board member of the Construction Contractors Board of the State of Oregon for 11 years, I am aware that the Oregon legislature has, certainly for the past 10 to 15 years, attempted to make Oregon more business friendly. You have worked hard to provide a positive climate in which Oregon businesses can grow and prosper. To prevent electric utilities like Central Electric from upgrading lawfully constructed transmission lines to serve the growing customer bases like we have makes no economic sense to me. It is contrary to Oregon's stated "we're open for business" philosophy. As a builder, I deal with permits and easements until, frankly, I'm blue in the face. And I yield to no one in my reverence for the sacred concept of private property. But private property owners who have agreed to provide easements to utilities like Central Electric in order to bring power lines to their property should not expect, let alone demand, financial compensation after that fact. This is especially true for electric cooperatives because the financial compensation sought by some private property owners would fall on the shoulders of other cooperative members who could, in the case of the line to Sisters, live more than 100 miles away. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and representatives. My name is Roy Peterson. I'm the chairman of the board of Central Electric, and I've served on the board since 79. And have been a co-op member since 76. I'm engaged in various farming operations in the Madras area and also am a member of the Farm Bureau. As chairman of the board, I want to emphasize that Central Electric is a not-for-profit organization, but it is owned by its members. In our co-op's case, more than 20,000 of them, Central Electric is not an investor-owned utility. Without a state stockholders that it must answer to, our co-op's mission is simple. We provide safe, reliable electric energy to our members at the lowest possible cost, period. I also want to emphasize that no Central Electric employee, executive, or board member will get any kind of financial benefit from the passage of Senate Bill 413. Our only interest is in making sure that our rapidly growing membership doesn't suffer blackouts or brownouts, especially in cold weather, because we are prevented from upgrading the carrying capacity of a power line built many years ago. As board chairman, I've been following both the official and the unofficial news surrounding Senate Bill 413. There seems to be some misconception that if Senate Bill 413 is passed, every last acre of private property in Oregon will be raped and pillaged. I would like to emphasize that Senate Bill 413 would not allow utilities like Central Electric to march across virgin Oregon landscape, erecting new power poles and lines with reckless abandon. Senate Bill 413 would merely allow these member-owned organizations to upgrade existing lines built on lawfully granted easements signed voluntarily by private property owners, nothing more, nothing less. Having lived in Central Oregon for more than 30 years, I can tell you that one of the biggest challenges we face east of the Cascade Mountains is providing basic essential services for the thousands of new residents who arrive in our communities every year. The population explosion of Central Oregon has tested every organization that serves the general public and none more than the area's utilities. Without adequate capacity on our transmission lines, we will not be able to provide reliable service to the ever-increasing number of members on our system, which, by the way, extends over an area of 5,300 square miles. CEC's easement on the Cyrus's property is not a 10-foot easement. It's a blanket easement. The members of CEC, and particularly the Sisters area, need action on Senate Bill 413 by you as soon as possible, and I would ask for your support. I would also add that there is no guesswork on our part in this determination. Thank you.
Any questions of this panel from the committee? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been testimony that this dispute has been going on for 4 years, that you've been to the county level, you've been to LUBA, you've been to the Court of Appeals where you lost. You've now filed Measure 37 claim. And then if this legislation is passed, my guess is you start the chain all over again. You go back to the county, you go back to LUBA, you go back to the Court of Appeals. At any time in this process, have you authorized negotiations with the property owner?
Could you repeat your question?
Yes, at any time in this 4-year process, have you authorized negotiations with the property owner?
Authorized negotiations in what direction do you mean? For this, on this easement?
Absolutely.
No. Not that I'm aware of.
No?
Not prior to negotiations. You mean for the easement or to build this line?
For the resolution of the dispute, however, that wherever that takes you.
Prior to 4 years ago?
No, during the last 4 years.
During the period of time, Lori.
Oh, yeah, we've tried to work with them every way possible to try and relocate the line, to try and shorten the thing. I don't understand what the problem is, to be quite frank with you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was represented that the cost of undergrounding this line would be no more than building a higher line. Is that true?
Absolutely not.
Can you give me a comparison of what the two would cost?
4 to 5 times.
Okay. Representative Summer.
Were there provisions? Thank you, sir. Were there provisions in the original 62 easement
that prohibited higher towers or towers of different shape or formation?
Not that I'm aware of.
Any other questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Just a quick question for information. Why would it cost more to maintain an underground line than it would above ground?
I'm not an electrical engineer, and nobody else in here either, including the previous testimony that you've heard. There are many reasons why underground is more expensive to build. One is we have a lot of lightning in Central Oregon.
Right.
When you have lightning and it hits the ground, it goes to fault. When it goes to fault, no matter how good the cable is that you put underground, over time an effect takes place called treeing, and that's when it goes to the weakest point in the line and causes a fault. So when that happens, then we got to dig it up, and that's difficult to find. And one of our major problems with underground is dig-ins from other contractors and or utilities.
So that's the maintaining.
Those are the two. Those are the two main things that come to mind right now. There are many other reasons.
Thank you.
If I could speak, sure. The materials we have, as far as, you know, we're going through solid block and all kinds of stuff like that. We have a tremendous problem with secondary and low voltage underground lines. Mm-hmm. When you get to 115 kV underground line, those problems are just going to multiply.
Mr. Chairman, what might add to that question was asking myself. One of the other main reasons, Representative Smith, is that with the type of topography that we have and the type of soils, which are volcanic rock, many times in order to put lines underground, we have to actually dynamite them out, because just going and digging them like you would over here in the Willamette Valley is not feasible to do.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Wisnett, could I ask you to come forward again, please? Representative, I think you said it very appropriately and very correctly when you opened your statement with saying, first is the requirement to protect individual property rights. Second is the requirement of electrical companies to meet the growing demand for power in our communities. You have posed the question quite beautifully with just that, those brief sentences. This committee has on occasion been asked to overturn local county commissioners and has done so for decisions in land use. I think we've probably also gone against Luba on a couple of occasions, but we've never gone against both of them on one occasion. With your permission and your approval, Representative, I'd like to, because I believe this does have statewide significance, but I believe the issue needs to be discussed further. And I would ask you if you would chair a work group composed of Mr. Cyrus, and I noticed Linda Swearingen is here, former Deschutes County Commissioner, Roger Martin, Dave Markham, and maybe Dave Honeycutt from Oregonians in Action. Put this work group together and see if we can, you can find a way to solve this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try my best. I would like to suggest, I haven't proposed this to you before, but that I co-chair it with Representative Ackerman. It's always good to have a good lawyer on your side.
I'm going to wake Ackerman.
Okay. All right.
Second.
I'm dead now.
You need help.
I wanted to go to Bend anyway, so be it. Thank you, Representative, and we'll ask that work group to come back to whatever is legislatively appointed as an interim land use committee.
Do I understand the meetings will take place in Sun River?
That sounds good to me, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think with the addition of Representative Ackerman and representatives of both sides of the party, and we'll try to do the best we can to satisfy both of those needs.
Thank you very much, Representative.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 413A. Mm-hmm. Because I know most of you remaining are here on Senate Bill 887. We'll kind of jump around a little bit and open a work session on Senate Bill 887A. And Sam, as if we needed it, we'll remind us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 887 is a fairly long, complicated one, but essentially it has many provisions in it that deal with the topic of annexation. It'll prohibit annexation of certain lands. Those industrial classifications and certain criteria, it would prohibit the bill as it is, came from the Senate, would prohibit the city of Beaverton from conducting any annexation. It does not allow for the consent of property owners. It has a sunset date. It would allow for plans to be submitted to the vote of the area to be annexed. It exempts certain businesses because of their unique characteristics of size, location, number of employees, and we received a number of amendments to that. And real briefly, once again, the dash six.
If you hang on for a second, Sam, we're going to review all of that in the during the process. Committee, what you have in front of you today are two more amendments to this bill. This is the purpose of this work session today, and the only purpose is to make you aware of the dash 14 and now the dash 17 amendments to this bill. So after we've heard from the proponents of the two amendments, committee, then Sam, I'll have you review all of the amendments we have received. So who do we have on 14?
14 is Mr. Jack.
That's amendment. Jack Esselman and Peter Bagman, would you both come forth, please? And if you would, explain to the committee what your dash 14s would do.
More detailed testimony.
Just what we need, Jeff. Very good.
In case you don't have enough text on this issue already.
We're approaching the gone with the wind category already.
I understand.
You want to start off first? I don't know. Peter wants to thank you, Rat. We really appreciate it.
Close to war and peace here.
Chair Garrard, committee members, with that, for the record, my name is Jack Esselman. I'm here today representing Columbia Sportswear and Electro Scientific Industries. Combined, these businesses employ nearly 1,000 people on the same street in the unincorporated territory of Washington County. Peter Bragman, Vice President and General Counsel of Columbia Sportswear, joins me. I will provide brief testimony on behalf of Electro Scientific Industries, or ESI, on the Dash 14 amendments. Mr. Bragman will follow on behalf of Columbia Sportswear Company. First, let me extend the regrets of ESI's CEO, Nick Konidaris, who had intended to be here today but is traveling in Japan. I will try to serve ably in his stead. Founded in 1949, ESI is one of the longest continuing operating electronics companies in Oregon. ESI supplies high-value capital equipment to the semiconductor industry and other electronics component manufacturers. Along with its neighbor, Tektronix, ESI is low growth in the Silicon Forest that is based in Washington County. In its last fiscal year, ESI recorded $200 million in revenues. ESI employs nearly 600 people worldwide, with more than 375 employees at its 15-acre headquarters campus in Washington County. ESI also employs approximately 50 people in a manufacturing facility in Klamath Falls, Oregon, that opened in 2001. With the assistance provided by the City of Klamath Falls, Klamath County, and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, ESI selected Klamath Falls over rival locations in Washington State and Asia. Even more recently, ESI invested over $5 million in 2002 for the construction of a new office building on its headquarters campus. Presently, under Beaverton's current annexation protocol, long-standing tributaries on ESI's property could be interpreted to make ESI's campus an island of unincorporated territory that Beaverton could incorporate into the city without ESI's consent under ORS Chapter 222-750. It could happen at any time and attach a cost of nearly $100,000 per year to ESI's operations. It is worth mentioning, and it is important to mention, that ESI maintains good and cordial relations with the city of Beaverton. For example, recently ESI has been willing to suspend its rights on nearby property that is the site of Beaverton Sunset High School to assist traffic flow and enhance safety around the school. Representatives of Beaverton have advised ESI that Beaverton has no intent on annexing ESI's property before 2015. So why am I here? I've asked that question myself. In the Dash 14 amendments, Senate Bill 887, ESI seeks only to codify this promise from Beaverton. And that is simply because the likelihood of a change in administration in Beaverton between today and 2015. This measure would allow ESI to plan its operations and assess its urban service requirements in the ensuing time period in a reasoned and thoughtful manner. Through endeavors too numerous to list, ESI has contributed through decades to the civic well-being of Oregon. ESI remains a significant employer in Washington County and in other communities in Oregon. To the degree this body deems it advisable to provide certainty to individual businesses impacted by the state's urban annexation laws, and more specifically by ORS Chapter 222, Section 50, ESI merits inclusion in such a measure. We appreciate your consideration of the Dash 14 amendments.
Any
questions?
Saying that,
did
a good job.
Yeah, I just like comment ESI's in my district that is yours, and I'm very much impressed. I visited with them, and I think they're an important part of the economic life in Sunset Corridor. I certainly hope you can keep them in mind.
Thank you, Representative.
I'll try and be even more brief, and if you'd like some background on Columbia, I'm glad to give it to you. I just wanted to let you know that we do support the passage of Senate Bill 887, and we believe that Section 11 of the Enrolled Bill, which essentially ensures that Columbia will not be involuntarily annexed to Beaverton before 2020, represents an adequate accommodation for our planning horizon, gives us the kind of certainty that we think we need for our investments. Senate Bill 87A accords Columbia Sportswear the same recognition it provides to our neighbor to the south, which is Nike down the street. And to the degree that this body feels the need to amend the bill for any entity or individual, Columbia just wants to be treated the same way, particularly where it's a competitor that's in the same industry. However, we're not really asking for or requiring any amendment to the enrolled bill. We simply want to be a part of it if there are changes being made for other companies. And what I really just want to close and give you an opportunity to ask questions if you like, by letting you know that while we support the bill and we appreciate the work that everybody is doing on this issue, our preference, our real preference, is for an approach to the issue that addresses the concerns of a wider range of individuals and entities. One concern that people have with annexation is the potential for cherry picking that benefits one entity and one enclave over another. And we're no more eager for the legislature to make similar choices, choices that favor one company over another. We expect to be treated as well as any other company in our industry, but we really do not seek advantages over any other business or our fellow citizens. And we wish to be given the same treatment as any competitor in our industry, but hope that equal attention is paid to the concerns of other businesses in the community and to the concerns of residents in the neighborhoods around our headquarters, which include many of our employees. So we hope for solutions that lay the groundwork for constructive discussions about the state's entire annexation policy for all communities. We believe it's possible to find solutions that will create a healthy business environment and benefit those communities. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Bragdon? Seeing them, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Mitch, I think you have the Dash 15s, right?
And
17s,
correct.
And
17s? Dash 17s.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Representative Ackerman that has the 15s. Am I correct there?
I think so. I'm still trying to compile my files since I last looked at it. And, yes, that is correct. Ackerman has 15s, which are a version of the 12s. In that it prohibits cities from using 222-750 from the effective date of the measure for until January 1st, 2008, where the 12s just delete 222-750 outright. If neither of those work, I wanted to make sure there were enough strings for the bow and I have 17, which repeals 222750, effective January 2, 2008. The sort of soft hammer that we talked about as possible. My preference, as I suppose, is Bob's, is the dash 12s. And then Bob's is my second favorite, and 17 is my third favorite. No, 12 is probably, so I mean, that's the outlet that we should.
Right. Mine is 15, which is a soft.
I don't have
a 15. 15? Yes, it would prohibit island annexation until the 2008 date, I think, when and would allow us to consider that issue in the interim task force. Nothing happened, then it would just be live on its own terms after that date in 2008.
Any questions of either of the representatives?
Okay, committee, we have now 17 amendments to Senate Bill 887. And the committee, as of this point, yes, representative.
Yes, I have 18, Mr. Chairman, they were just delivered to me today. And what happened, and I discussed this with Representative Greenlick, is that one of his amendments inadvertently struck language in the engrossed bill, lines 4 through 19, which has to do with the supermajority annexation under ORS 195. I haven't had a chance to review those dash 18 amendments because they just were given to me when we were in session this morning, and I have reason to believe they may be incorrect.
I wouldn't worry about it. Well, I think we'll bring the hammer down on 17 and leave it at that. So,
The only problem with 17, as I've just seen it, is there are some things that are repealed in the end, and I'm not sure what that is. I think, Mr. Chair, we need to figure out essentially what it is we want to do, and then I assume we'll get an omnibus set of amendments that will put that in place.
That's, Mr. Riggs, Doug, you have 18 that you're thinking about.
That sounds like we're 19.
Or 19. I mean, you reach a certain point where you just don't count.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Doug Riggs with the Central Oregon Cities Organization. We're getting close to the record. I think it's what, dash 38 for the record and something like that. I have an amendment which Representative Burley gave me a note for, which is down at the Legislative Council. I realized we wouldn't be ready for today, but I did want to just discuss it with you briefly. And I've had conversations with each of you on the city concerns from Central Oregon. But really, I think my amendment would be fairly simple. It would take the Bill 887 as written. It would try to come up with, and Harrison is working with me on the specific language, some language that would provide for a little additional flexibility for fast-growing areas that do not have the ability to provide water, sewer, and fire protection through special districts. And I think that's the main difference between the Washington County, Eugene, Springfield area, and Central Oregon. Bend, Redmond, Grindville, et cetera, do not have special districts. And so what I'm trying to do here is come up with something that would allow these fast-growing areas to continue to provide residential property for people moving into the area, industrial property for people wanting to locate businesses. So that would be provision one. And the second is the right-of-way annexation provision that the committee approved in House Bill 3084, I believe, last Monday, a week ago last Monday, which in my mind really gets at the real issue in Beaverton, which was the artificial annexation of streets in order to create an island, which then you could use 222750 to annex. And so in my thinking, this very specifically targets the main egregious action on the part of certain cities in the state. And the third provision would be a provision from Senate Bill 699, which I understand is up in the Senate committee tomorrow morning, authored by Representative Escobel, which would have a consent requirement for annexing certain large industrial properties. And then the rest of the bill would retain the provisions, for the most part, that are already in the bill, including Beaverton provisions, specific industrial provisions like the amendments that have been offered today, and the mediation location requirements that have been outlined by Senator Decker that are in the bill. So I hope to have more details on the draft here in the next couple of days that I'd be able to share with you, but at least wanted to put it on the table for consideration.
Any questions of Mr. Wright? Thank you, Doug. It's like a rock rolling down the side of a mountain. The further down it goes, the bigger it gets. Okay, committee, you have proposed 18 amendments, maybe 19, and there may even be a 20. So we will close the work session on Senate Bill 887A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 688A.
Committee Senate Bill 688A is one which came out of the Senate with a vote of 25 yeas, and the remainder were excused or attending a legislative business. It will specify that a development agreement is binding on the city or county and an owner developer pursuant to terms of duration of the agreement. Specifically, what this deals with is that a number of times in instances such as subdivisions, but does not have to be limited to those, could be other kind of developments of apartments or condominiums or PUDs. As part of the approval, the city or county will do an agreement with the developer over improvements. And this particular amendment will specify that those agreements that during the life of that agreement that the county or city cannot change the rules essentially by amending any of its ordinances. That has been known to happen, I understand, not so much with counties but with some select cities that has occurred. This will make it binding. And there is a dash, and specifically it will be binding on cities for 15 years and on counties for 4 years. There is a dash 2 amendment I'll bring attention to that was submitted from Art Schlack, and it would seek to amend the 4-year limitation on counties to 7 years. Apparently the 4 years and 7 years has some reference in statutes or that on other locations. So this would, the 7 on the counties would line it up in another part of statutes.
Do you have a sign up sheet? Okay, we have 3 people signed up, so I'll ask all 3 to come forward because they're all for this bill. Tom Gallagher, Art Schlack, and Linda Lundin. All strangers to this committee. Tom Gallagher is missing.
Yes, sir.
It appears so, Mr. Chair. And we can do without him.
We could go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 688 and the dash 2 amendments at this point. Senate Bill 688 started out as a concept to deal with the question of, or the issue of vested rights. And as a result of a lot of discussion between the development community and cities and counties, the bill was amended in the Senate to help clarify development agreements that you have, that the bill in its current form at this point. The dash 2 amendments basically changes the number 4 to number 7. And let me call your attention to the bill, lines 9 and 10. It speaks to, and this is section 1 of ORS 94504, and dealing with development agreements that cities and counties may enter into. On lines 9 and 10, you'll see the duration of the agreement, which may not exceed 4 years for a development of fewer than 7 lots, and 7 years for the development of 7 lots or more. So this was intended primarily to deal with residential developments, although it could deal with other development at this point. But as you can see, there was 2 time periods, 4 and 7. And the bill as it came out of the Senate, at least on the county side, is the shorter time frame. And we believe that the longer time frame, 7 years, because we do have some projects that are a little bit larger, is reasonable, and that's why we proposed the amendment. I would just note, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that if you look at the city provision, it is 15 years. So we're talking about 15 years for cities and 7 years for counties at this point. And this allows a development to be phased and funding to be secured. And we think that is quite reasonable at this point, Mr. Chair. So we would urge the committee to support Senate Bill 688 with the -2 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do that.
Any questions of Mr. Schlack? Seeing none, Ms. Ludwig.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. My story differs a little bit than Mr. Schlack's, having been involved just a little more intimately with the crafting of the initial amendment to this bill. This bill did come forward by Mr. Gallagher's clients representing the commercial industrial users in the state, the group that he works with, for larger developments. And as Mr. Schlack said, the initial bill dealt with vested rights. However, with negotiations, we quickly looked at tuning up permissive development agreements. Mr. Gallagher's clients were very, very interested in city development agreements, municipal development agreements, and being able to extend out that period of time, i.e. the 15 years there. There have not been very many of these development agreements utilized yet in the state at this point in time. And our concern with elongating the county time frame from either the current numbers of 4 years for a development of fewer than 7 lots or 7 years for a development of 7 or more lots is that when a city potentially would be annexing a portion of land that had a county development agreement on it, we could end up in a particularly bind, if you will. So our position here with both the -1 and the -2, and we haven't had much time to talk amongst ourselves because this really came out just yesterday, what the language of the -2 says, is we could probably support that longer period of time for the county as long as we had some language that would say if and when or until the property annexed to the city. Or another one conceptually that I would like to bring forward was at the front end of the development agreement that the county was going into, if there was potential for it to be annexed at a later date and time, that the city would also agree to the time frames and the stipulations of that development agreement. Just so we make this a smooth process between the county and the city if that development would be annexed midstream.
Mr. Schlack, do you agree with Ms. Ludwig's change in the dashboard?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't, not at this point, without further discussion. I can't say that I agree. There may be areas, and I'm thinking of Washington and
Ockham's counties. These agreements can deal with rural areas, but there are portions at least of those two counties that are as urban as any city. And these kinds of agreements are very important to obtaining the funding that's required. Mr. Chair, I would just say that if we were going to do anything to not do the 7 years, that we would just leave the language that's in the statute applicable to the county, the 4 and the 7 years. And that's, if I was to compromise any place, it would be there.
In other words, the original bill.
The original language would apply to the counties, and if the cities want to have 15 years, then that's fine.
Mr. Gallagher, are you prepared?
Mr. Chair, Tom Gallagher, representing the urban developers who brought this bill. I don't know why these things happened to me.
Okay.
I don't care.
Anymore, Mr. Chair.
I'd just like to try to get a bill out of this committee.
It has become somewhat difficult, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's all my own fault. To the first proposal, it wouldn't do any good to have the agreement automatically end upon annexation, because the developer would have made an investment based on an agreement with the county, and then all of a sudden it disappears upon annexation. I think this committee is dealing with enough difficult issues around annexation without adding another one to that. Toward the potential of having all three parties agree if there was potential for annexation, while I understand why that has some attractiveness to it in a sense, I don't know how anybody would work out how that would just make it even more difficult for the developer to go with one party who had a vested interest, the county, and another party that only had a potential interest. How would ever get to an agreement on that? I think Mr. Slack may have a solution, which is to use the existing statutory language for counties, which is 4 years for small developments and 7 years for large developments, which would cover Washington and Clackamas County, and that would go back as status quo except for the cities. I could agree with that, I think.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? So to understand, your position is that you would be okay with just going with the amended version that came over from the Senate. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's not correct.
Okay.
The committee believes that there needs to be a compromise between the dash twos and what the city has offered, then what I would propose is that using the same language for counties that is on lines 9 and 10 of the page 1 of the bill, which would say the duration of the agreement may not exceed 4 years for development of fewer than 7 lots, and 7 years for development of 7 or more.
You're assuming that the committee doesn't have a problem with the dash twos.
Yes, sir. I'm assuming that.
Stop.
Yes, sir.
Is there any further questions? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 688A, and the chair would ask for a motion.
What motion do you want?
The chair would move the dash twos to Senate Bill 688A. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call a roll.
Representative
Ackman? Aye.
Representative
Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Sumner?
Aye.
Representative
Gretchen? Chair votes aye. The dash twos are moved to Senate Bill 688A. The chair would seek another motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I move Senate Bill 688 as amended to the floor of the Duke Pass recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved Senate Bill 688A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Senate Bill 688A is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a volunteer as a carrier?
Consent calendar.
Go ahead.
Consent calendar.
I think who made the motion should carry.
All right, the chair will carry.
You may be the only one who understands.
We've closed the work session on Senate Bill 688A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1044. And I think, is Bob Rindy still here?
Mm.
Yes.
He is.
And as they're coming, Senate Bill 1044 is one which will eliminate a provision specifying the county map of lands eligible for the destination result siting in Western Oregon be amended. Currently, the Western Oregon counties are required to only do it during periodic review. This piece of legislation would allow them to do it outside of periodic review. It passed in the Senate 26 ayes, and the remainder were excused or attending business.
Linda Swearington also is signed up to speak, and this is in essence your bill, so I should let you lead, and then I'll let Mr. Rindy indicate that we have received the letter in your files from Mr. Shetterly. So, Linda, good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Linda Swearington. I'm from Deschutes County, and I'm here on Senate Bill 1044, and it really is a housekeeping bill. It allows Western Oregon counties to adopt a revised or destination resort overlay map outside of periodic review. And as you are aware, right now, counties are exempt from the periodic review process, and so they're not in it like they were in the past. And this is where they actually were able to amend their overlay maps. And so what this bill will do is it would give them the same opportunity that Eastern Oregon counties have, and that is to revise or amend their destination resort map not more frequently than once every 30 months. And it does not make any other changes to the statute. There still will be differences between the destination resort statute in Eastern Oregon and Western Oregon, but this will give counties an opportunity to amend their maps.
Any questions? Seeing none, Bob, would you like to add A or nay to this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Rindy for the record, and we are here in support of this, as you've, I think, what I heard already, there was an interim periodic review committee to make recommendations for changes, and I think everybody understands and many agree that where we're headed for periodic review is to not have counties in it. So this is a necessary amendment. Counties need another process. They can't be stuck with only using periodic review since they're not likely to be in it.
Any questions of Mr. Rindy? Seeing none, thank you both.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1044 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1044. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, yes, thank you. I move Senate Bill 1044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved Senate Bill 1044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Wallace?
Yes.
Representative
Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Smith? Yes. Representative
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
And the chair votes aye. Representative Anderson, would you like to
vote?
Yes, or is this another
phew
for the consent calendar?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to place on the consent calendar.
Representative Smith is saying the consent calendar. Is there any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1044 is passed with a due pass recommendation and to the consent calendar. Mm-hmm. And the last item on the list is, committee, this was a bill that we sent out. It had some serious problems in it. We are just doing committee housework here. We're going to bring the bill, reconsider the bill, simply to let it die. Okay? So we will, we have the scripts here if anybody wants to read them officially. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the provided bill side, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3285.
Representative Anderson moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3285. Again, the reason, committee, is because there were errors in the bill in regards to some of the statute numbers and the responsibilities of the Department of Agriculture. We passed House Bill 3284 to the floor on May 6th, and since that meeting, there were objections brought forth by both the Department of Agriculture and by the authors of the bill. So, are there any objections to Representative Anderson's motion to suspend the rules?
I just want to understand where we are procedurally. We have voted this bill out.
We did vote this bill out.
No,
it wasn't read in the first reading.
No, it was not dropped on the floor to the floor. So
okay,
that's what I'm trying to say.
My question.
Bring
it back.
All right.
Don't intend to work it.
No. It's just a procedure in that they can't let it hang out between the floor and the committee. We have to do something with it.
It either has to come back to the committee or it has to go to the floor, but it can't just lie there suspended, according to the clerk.
It could have gone to the floor and then be re-referred.
Correct.
So we never had a second reading, third reading.
Never had a second reading.
No.
So seeing no objections to the rules being suspended, Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I move we consider the vote by which we passed House Bill 3285.
Now, Representative Anderson moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 3285. Are there any objections? If not so, ordered. Thank you, committee. We got through all of it, and we will see you on Monday. The House Committee on Land Use is adjourned.